Welcome to the Collide Podcast. We're a growing community of everyday chicks colliding with Jesus in our mess, our pain, our joy, and our stories. We value showing up as we truly are, so that's what you'll find here. Walls and masks being torn down so that we can allow Jesus to meet us where we truly are and hear about other women doing the same. We can't wait to collide with you.
The idea of truly being dependent daily and hourly on God's grace, that there's actually a freedom in dependence, and that freedom isn't always discovered in a moment, but it's in a daily and hourly dependence on Christ. I wish more people talked about grace and freedom being like that than a one-time being set free, because I consistently was let down because I had the wrong perspective.
Welcome to the Collide Podcast. I'm Willow Weston, the founder and director of Collide, and today I'm super excited to have a very honest, vulnerable, and what I believe will be a life-changing conversation with Clinton and Charity, who founded Restored to More. It's a ministry focused on helping couples rebuild intimacy after infidelity and helping women heal from betrayal. And this ministry is truly the overflow of God's healing in their own story, which I can't wait to talk about. Restored to More provides a weekly podcast, workshops for couples, one-on-one coaching, and insightful content through their YouTube channel, Facebook, and Instagram feed. These guys have been married for 7 years with three little boys, all under the age of four, which is crazy. And I am so excited to talk to these guys about a topic that is so relevant to so many of our lives, a subject that brings up so much pain. And yet these two offer hope and freedom in the midst of it. You guys, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast.
Thanks for having us. We feel honored to be able to be here talking with you and hopefully giving just one listener hope.
Yeah, we love what you guys are doing with Collide. It's just amazing to be reaching hearts, like you said, and have God to take brokenness and use it to build up others is absolutely just an honor and a privilege for sure. It's very humbling.
Thank you. Well, I have so many questions for both of you, but first I'm going to start with a few questions for you, Charity. I want to start with, how did you discover that your husband, you know, that Clinton had a porn problem, and where did you go in your mind when you found this out?
Yeah. So, I'll take us way back. So before he actually started to court me, we were good friends, and we had both been in long-term relationships before, and so we really knew that the next person that we were going to date, we really wanted to date with intention and purpose. And so before he decided to ask my dad for permission to start courting me, he wanted to really just have one night where he kind of just vocally verbalized pretty much all of his flaws and weaknesses. And in that night, he had shared about how pornography was something that he had struggled with, but had promised me that it was in the past. He also had shared in that conversation that he lost his virginity to a prostitute while on a mission trip in China. And for some reason in my, and he's like bawling and weeping. And for some reason in my head, you know, I think I was just so anxious and excited to date him that lust was way more my vision, unfortunately, than clarity was. And so, I was like, okay, well, you know, that's okay. Like, I didn't even question it. I was just like, well, if that's not a struggle now and that's not who you are, like, we all have junk. We all have made mistakes. Like, who am I to judge you? You know, I have my past too. And so, he was like, wow, okay. And so then, we started courting, and, we got engaged, and then we got married. And, he had mentioned when we were married, you know, every so often, I'd say probably about like maybe like every 4 months, maybe, that he was like, hey, can you make sure you lock the computer? You know, I'm struggling or something. And I was just like, okay, sure. Never once really thought, that it was a bigger issue. I was really naive on the topic, to be honest. I really didn't know, what pornography does to the brain and the body and how it can lead to an addiction and then, worse things by acting out and such. And so, then 2 years into our marriage, everything kind of hit the fan, and I had stumbled upon a Twitter account that had, was just flooded with porn. And so that kind of made me go into, I would say, a detective mode and went on his email and found an accountability group that he was sharing information with, and just saw kind of everything that he had been doing in our marriage with strip clubs and massage parlors. And my heart sank. I literally thought that this was a joke and that this was the wrong guy. And there was no way that this was my husband, because I know what he does every day. I know that he wouldn't do this. And so I was shocked and perplexed and confronted him, and then he kind of had no option but to say that that was him, that was his email. So he kind of got caught in the action, and it was just it was a big wake-up call for both of us to realize that this was way bigger than just, hey, I'm viewing porn. It was bigger than us at that point.
I have so many questions to ask you, Charity, but One question that I kind of want to go backwards and ask you. You mentioned, you know, that Clinton was really forthright about this struggle and how you just were so excited to date him and be with him and get married, that I don't hear regret for who you chose to marry, but I hear a little regret on what you chose to process. Mm. And I guess what I want to ask you is if you could go back to that moment. I mean, because there's some people listening who might be in that place in that time right now in their dating life. Like, what would you choose to process? How would you choose to engage that information differently now?
That is such a great question. You know, I truly, if I could go back, yeah, I do not regret the man that I married, but I regret that we didn't start getting help and support and work done then. I wish that I would have asked more questions, and I wish I would have dug a little deeper and kind of questioned, like, wow, you know, sleeping with a prostitute is no joke. You know, what led you there? Mm-hmm. And I wish I would have asked the question of, you know, when did you first view pornography? And, has it been a struggle, you know, for X amount of years, and then gone to a counselor, with him and kind of, dealt on that issue together? Because I think our society does a really bad job in promoting pornography and also saying that it's every man's struggle. You know, every man does it. And there's really a lack of education as to what pornography actually does to the brain and how it affects the significant other. And so I wish we just would have done some more digging and done some counseling around that, so I could have better understood what he was actually going through. And then he could have started gaining support and help in that time frame, and same with me. So and especially in premarital, like, I wish that they go over a topic of sex, but I personally believe that there needs to be more education around pornography, because the stats are there. You know, there's a huge percentage of men, whether you're a Christian or not, that is viewing pornography. And so it's not a matter of if they're watching pornography, they've probably been exposed to it. And so how has that affected you and your view of intimacy and sexuality? And I wish that was discussed in our relationship, so we could have started this process way earlier on. And it could have helped me realize what I was signing up for too.
Right. I mean, I love the invitation for us to hear that anybody who's in that place where you hear someone being vulnerable, opening up. I mean, it sounds like, Clinton, you were super authentic. And part of the invitation for us as we listen to your story is not to just wash that over with grace, which I think a lot of times as Christians, we feel the pressure to just have grace, but not really like enter into the woundedness of something and actually invite healing into that place. Because you found yourself 2 years later, and you say you're in detective mode, and you found out now it's like beyond looking at porn, but like Clinton is acting it out. And so when you found out that information, Charity, did you go to a place in your mind where you thought this marriage is over? Or what was your emotional response to all this information?
Yeah. You know, at first I was just shocked. I felt like I was going to throw up. My body started shaking. I grabbed a pillow because he was sleeping at the time. I was getting ready for work when I kind of found everything, grabbed a pillow. And he's lucky it was a pillow, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's true.
But grabbed the pillow and started whacking him with it. And because I was just so angry, like I didn't know how else to respond, but out of anger, hurt, frustration, confused. shock, desperation mode. And of course, my immediate thought was, I'm getting a divorce. Like, there is no way I'm going to stay in a relationship. Like, you cheated on me. And so that's when he was like, okay, well, I want to do whatever I can. I want to be with you. I don't want you to leave. And we started opening up to other people about it. And so, yeah, I think that was, my initial response, was that.
Clinton, how about you in that moment where you were sleeping and all of a sudden started getting beaten up by a pillow? You found out that your wife knew what you were up to. What was going on inside of you in that moment?
Yeah, I am grateful it wasn't a cast iron skillet. That's for sure. That would have been a different story. You know, emotionally, I think most addicts and most people struggle to try to first hide it, right? Because our first thing is denial. And so my brain worked 1,000 miles a minute to try to find a way to put this on somebody else. This wasn't me. I tried to lie. But I think too, there's also this internal desire to be free. Right? We really actually want, there's a part of us, I believe, that wants to be exposed, because if we're exposed, then we can stop looking over our shoulder every 5 seconds of the day. Every time she would grab my phone, I was worried she was going to find something or grab her computer or grab something. And so there was such a mix of emotions of being angry that she, and I could try to blame her in that moment. Like, should I blame her for going on my phone? Like, this is your fault. You're on my emails. You know, I had a choice to make. It was like all these crossroads popped up in an instant. And for me, I just believe that being a Christian, there was so much of this, so many overwhelming feelings of a desire of repentance, right? I constantly had this conviction, I believe, of the Holy Spirit, that I knew it was wrong and it was not honoring God. It wasn't honoring my wife. And so when she discovered that I had done all these things, I actually viewed it as an opportunity to really come clean and open up about what I was doing. And I did. I opened up, told her what she'd seen was true, and told her what I had done up to that point, and started and pursued getting some help. So I wouldn't say there was necessarily one emotion. I was scared out of my mind. And then she immediately said she wanted a divorce. So that wasn't like, oh, that's not how I really saw it playing out. I thought I would own it. And then she'd say, all right, let's work on it. So she's like, I'm leaving you. That sucked. But then she really called some people and they said, well, you don't have to leave him if he's trying to work on it, if he's opening up. And I was really willing to do whatever it took to get help at that time. And so that's probably what went through my brain, my experience as soon as that happened. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the days and weeks and maybe months to come, Charity, did you ever blame yourself? And I ask that question because I guess I kind of have to be real that I feel like a lot in Christian culture and maybe even outside, when we hear that a husband has a porn problem or a sexual addiction, it's often the wife that's blamed for not doing enough or being enough to satisfy the husband. And I guess I'm just kind of wondering if you dealt with these shame-inducing kinds of thoughts where it all of a sudden became all your fault.
Totally. 100%. Yes. Because I didn't understand. I always viewed like, hey, you're going to porn because you know, are horny and you want to act out that, you know, feeling. And so for me, I was like, man, people are going to think that we're not having sex. Like, I'm depriving him. I'm probably not having sex with him enough. And the hardest part about this and a part of our story, but I feel like I don't take it back because now we can relate to a lot of people. But, you know, that first time we actually started reaching out to people, we actually got connected to a pastor. And the pastor's advice for me was, Charity, will have sex with him more and wear him out more. And so that just completely magnified my thoughts of already feeling not enough, that this is now my problem. And the worst part about it is now I'm making it my problem because I'm hearing this advice from a pastor, the only person that we've talked and opened up about this. And so now I'm like carrying all this shame. And then we start actually taking that advice and I'm becoming a different person in the bedroom and acting out different things and feeling so uncomfortable. Yeah, I'm thinking that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And in return, I'm finding out that he's struggling the next day. And so then I'm like, man, we're really screwed up. Like, if we got advice from a pastor and we're not even being fixable that way. Like we just stayed in more shame. And then we decided not to open up to anybody. And it really just kind of ate at us both individually alive.
Wow. I feel like there are so many people that can resonate with your guys' story. Charity, you talk about betrayal trauma. Can you tell us what that is?
So betrayal trauma is when you have put trust in a relationship, like my husband. I trusted him. I have put, you know, our life and security, and you think you know this person. And then I'll give you kind of an analogy. And then when I'm sleeping, he is going down underneath our house. He created a secret attic with secret access, and he is having a completely different life down there, sexually, with, you know, fantasies, whatever you want to put it. And then he comes back up and locks the door and then continues living this life. And so I not only know, I don't know about this secret attic. But he is living this completely different life down there. And so what happens is, when that is found out from a significant other, what it does to a woman is it makes them lose all sense of safety, security, and trust in that person, because you believe that you knew this person, and why would they create something, and how did you not know about it? And it's right underneath our home, and it just makes you feel like it gives you symptoms of post-traumatic stress. It could also have symptoms of PTSD, and it really does a lot of havoc on your body if you don't communicate what you're going through to someone, which unfortunately is what had happened to me. I had developed a lot of anxiety and triggers, and started having depression. I started having an eating disorder, and sciatic nerve pain. I started losing my hair. And so there was a lot of symptoms that had come out of betrayal trauma.
Wow. I don't love that you experienced this, but I have to say, Charity, I love how you invite us into all of its effects. I think it's so helpful for us to hear how devastating this experience can be, and also for those going through it, what some of the, you know, effects are. Clinton, you say you were 11 years old when you first saw porn.
Yeah.
And you now have kids. So when you think about that experience as a child, how do you feel?
Yeah, I pretty much keep them in the closet most days, and I lock the door. That way they just can't get out, and I just give them a few toys, you know.
And they're all boys.
Yeah, no, we have three boys, and it's a thought I think of actually very frequently all the time. I've been thinking lately, you know, my phone has no access to internet at all, so there's no access points there. So I feel fine when I give them my phone, no big deal, because they're just going to look at my photo album and look at their videos and stuff like that. But whenever they're holding Charity's phone, I get anxious. I get crazy anxious, because we know that studies show that kids don't find porn. Porn finds kids. The whole porn industry has a marketing tactic to get kids to look up things like Elmo on the World Wide Web, and they type them to Google. What pops up is, of course, first images are probably of Elmo and Sesame, but the next images are going to be a sexy Elmo suit worn by some girl that's wearing it for Halloween, or some kind of a sex toy called Elmo this or something that. And so it normally actually finds kids, even at the age of 5 to 7 now, versus the average age being 10 a few years back. I'm not worried necessarily about my kids finding it, but more that I know that it is actively seeking my kids' attention. So we're always thinking of how to put blocks up and how to talk to parents about stuff. Even things like YouTube aren't safe with your inability to control the ads, because YouTube is definitely a way that things can get in there. And for me, it was very innocent. You know, I was 11 years old. I had seen a girl in a bikini. A normal response of a boy is to see any kind of skin and to be attracted to it. I mean, that's very normal. And I wanted to see more of that. And so I went on a computer. I typed in hot girls, and I thought I would see a girl in a bathing suit and it would be attractive to me. And the hardest core porn you can imagine popped up, and I was hooked, like the shame hook, the hook of what it made me feel, the different emotions went on my body. And so I just know that for me, I wasn't even looking for it, right? It found me in that instance. And I am always thinking about, okay, what are we going to do? And of course, we pray about it all the time, but even be active about teaching our kids healthy sexuality. For us, it's not a question of if they ever see porn. It's just a matter of when. And when they see porn, the question is, are they going to be open with us enough to come to us and tell us? Are we going to normalize it? Are we going to know that if they see pornography, one question I'm going to ask my kids is, did you like it? And I hope they respond with saying yes, because if they say no, they're lying. there is something about it that is attractive. There's something about it that is like, oh my gosh, I made me feel something, and it made me feel like excited, and I felt good, and then I hated myself at the same time. And I think it's important to really have such a grace to come at with kids, because I just think most parents are equipped. Unfortunately, what's going on is most adults aren't talking about their own sexuality in an open way. And so we come across more condemning than questioning when our kids are going through their own understanding of sexualization and their own sexuality. And as they see other things out there that people are doing, or they hear about a friend who is sexually promiscuous, are we just saying, oh my gosh, I'm going to call their mother or father? Well, in reality, our kids need to realize there is such a grace that we have for them that we can meet them where they're at. Otherwise, we're going to close off the door and we're going to produce more shame tactics, which we, as we know, doesn't produce healthy behavior.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about your 11-year-old self, because I know in my own story of pain, I've had to do some of this work for my own healing, where I visit, you know, the points of sort of the origin of wounds. And when you think about how much porn sort of shaped or altered or affected your life, if you could go back and say something to that 11-year-old boy, what would you say?
You know, I've asked this question before, and I always get kind of stuck on it because I just wonder if it's changed over the years of recovery work that I've done and things like that. And you know, during that time, I honestly would probably just tell him to do the same thing that he did. And that's an interesting comment, probably, because in my story, I had opened up with my dad, church leaders, my youth pastor, some men in the church that were mentors of mine, and they didn't get it, and they were shaming. And even if they tried to help, they didn't know how to help. And the only thing that really got me free today was I never gave up trying to open up about my secret sins. I've probably told over 12 to 15 different men one-on-one that I had struggled. And it wasn't until the last group of men that I had told over the past 3 years that were actually able to help me. I guess what I would tell that 11-year-old kid would be, they just forgive them, because they don't know how to come alongside you. I'd say, don't get mad at them. They're not trying to shame you. They don't know how to respond. They don't know how to help you. Just keep seeking out help. Don't think that one person, because of their response, that's not the answer. That's their answer, but that's not the ultimate answer. The ultimate answer can only be found in Scripture, where Jesus says that I designed you to walk in freedom, that I didn't design you to live a life in bondage. I didn't design for you to live a life where you're trapped by this. The Spirit of God can set you free, but it also is probably going to be a process. Right? I got so angry for so long that God didn't heal me in a moment. And it wasn't until later, when I understood the idea of truly being dependent daily and hourly on God's grace, that there's actually a freedom in dependence, and that freedom isn't always discovered in a moment, but it's in a daily and hourly dependence on Christ. I wish more people talked about grace and freedom being like that than a one-time being set free, because I consistently was let down because I had the wrong perspective.
Mm. And I think so many can resonate with that, whether their struggle is with alcohol, their struggles with, I mean, you name it, right? I think oftentimes in Christian culture, we have been told, like, you know, ask God for forgiveness and he heals you. You should be done with the struggle. And then there's no permission slip to share that you're still battling. You're still in the battle. And then you start to live a life of secrets, which I want to talk to you about in a little bit. But before we get there, there's a statistic on your guys's website that says porn use increases marital infidelity rate, that rate by 300%. Talk to us about how you see porn affecting marriages in ways that maybe people don't really realize.
Charity's giving me the nod, so I'll take it on this one. Well, I mean, first of all, it's an interesting topic. We could talk about this for a while, but the one thing that I like to hit on is that that statistic, infidelity, is actually relating to having sex with somebody else outside the bond of marriage, which I will definitely answer your question. But I think we also need a question, is porn infidelity? Is porn cheating? We did a YouTube video on this recently, and I think guys would love to say that it isn't cheating. And my own story was years I was saying I wasn't actually cheating on charity because it was just porn. It was just masturbation. It was just a lap dance. I wasn't actually having sex with that person. There was no intercourse going on, and there was a justification. And I think we should ask that question of ourselves. And I think as guys, we should really ask our wife and say, hey, when I look at porn and masturbate to another woman, do you feel cheated on? Because sometimes it doesn't really matter the actual technical term and the specificity of things. We can do that all day long. But the question is, what are our wives experiencing? Because in our case, with the couples that we've come alongside, betrayal through pornography or through sexual intercourse is the same experience for our wives. And that's something we can uncover for a while. But what porn does is porn increases the marital infidelity rate because porn is never enough. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, that's the thing is that sin and pornography will take you where you don't want to go. It'll take you further than you ever thought you would go, and it will cost you more than you ever thought you would spend. And I think that's what's happening, right? It's not enough to watch pornography. If we see the way porn has accelerated over the years, gone from a magazine with Playboy to an actual person we're watching doing something live, to where now we can actually be included in that live session with somebody performing it. Now we can do meetups, and now there's apps that are regularly being created, such as Tinder, to really just do hookups. So it's just all about one night stand, and it's accepted, right? There's things like all those apps out there that are being created for cheating spouses. So now there's apps being created saying cheating is okay, right? The whole, I forget what it's called, Madison something. It's like, hey, life is short, have an affair. There's all these things being created for a push, and that's all because of the influx in pornography. We're seeing that porn is the fastest growing addiction in America. Because it has the three A's, right? It's accessible, it's anonymous, and it's affordable. And so with that happening, you're increasing the stimulation, but we know that the stimulation of pornography and masturbation is never going to be enough because that's how it does to our brain. Our brain gets desensitized over time. And so I warn wives all the time, if your husband's looking at porn, it's not going to stop there. Most likely it's going to feed into something else, an emotional affair, a physical affair, a sexual affair. I mean, it's going to go somewhere in their life because at some point these fantasies, they want to be lived out. So that's what's really going on. And that's why that statistic is there on our website for sure.
And I just want to add one thing, but it totally affects the marriage bedroom. And because now you are walking in there and you are not being completely known. There is another, secret. And the pinnacle of a sexual intimacy is being completely known from the inside out, right? And so you are walking in that bedroom, being vulnerable, authentic. And if there is secret sin and hiding, then there comes into the marriage bedroom is shame. And you're just not proud of what you're doing to yourself, right? And so you can't love your wife and view her the same way. Unfortunately, what normally happens is if you are viewing pornography a lot, then now sex has just become an object rather than a person. Yes. And so it just becomes something that is tainted, unfortunately. And it's really sad.
And most of the time, that man will never be able to get off the same way he does to porn.
Yeah.
It's super sad to think, but when you're doing masturbation, you're doing all the movements yourself. You're in total control of what's going on. You're in fantasy land. You're with somebody that has this image of what is attractive to that person. And the recreation in the bedroom is near impossible, which is why sex was never meant to be a transaction, but to be an experience between two people who are being intimate in other ways with each other. We believe that sex is the pinnacle of intimacy. Sex is not intimacy. Sex is the pinnacle of intimacy. And sexual intimacy is an intimacy, but it's different, right? And so we taught us a lot because I was having erectile dysfunction even at 26, 27 years old, which is crazy to think about, right? And I was using charity. We had addicted sex all the time where I was actually orgasming to something other than our experience. I was just picturing myself somewhere else. And that was what I had to do to orgasm with charity. So we're getting really raw and real on your podcast here. But I think that's the reality of it. The reality is it was affecting us. And so there is the excitement factor. There's the danger factor that sexual intimacy in the bond of marriage doesn't have. You're not going to have dangerous sex in your bedroom when the kids are asleep. You know what I mean? And so you can't even create what you're creating in pornography. It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, mm-hmm. the real deal doesn't even satisfy.
Yeah.
Because we have become infatuated with a fake creation, which is so sad. It's almost like the difference between something that was beautiful, that God created to be holy and amazing and an incredible experience. I mean, there's amazing chemicals already in an orgasm, but we have added so much of this false stuff to it that it can only be recreated with this falsehood of a fake relationship, that you can't be intimate. And that's what one night stands are, right? If there's any kind of sexual intercourse or even a strip club or a massage parlor or pornography, it's all this pseudo relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's only on the context of physical interaction. And it doesn't have the gravity of a relationship, which is sad, but that's the reality of what we're facing.
I want to first say thank you for being raw and real, because I don't want to have some pansy conversation about this.
I get it.
It doesn't really engage people in the real pain that all of this causes. So I have so much like respect and admiration for you guys and how honest you are about this. I also want to pause for a moment and maybe be real about the fact that this is also not just an issue for men. It's also an issue for women. Like, tables turned. If the women have issues with porn and everything you're describing, it can also ruin a marriage. And that the rates of porn for women are drastically increasing. Am I right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes, totally. We are actually interviewing on our podcast. Her name is Crystal Renande. And she started a woman's recovery specifically for women to overcome viewing porn and love addiction and sex addiction and lust addiction and all that stuff for women, which I think is amazing. And it's called She Recovery. We actually have a lot of people reaching out to us and, you know, just reminding us like, hey, there's women who struggle with this too. It's just, unfortunately, it's just not talked about as much, especially in churches and stuff. You know, the perspective is men struggle, you know, men have less, you know, and so we're not talking about it from a woman's perspective. So there's just even more shame, because then you're just sitting in church and you're like, oh my gosh, how come he's not addressing me? It's just supposed to be a guy's issue, not a woman's issue.
Then you're a real weirdo if it's you as a woman.
Yeah.
You guys laid out for us basically sort of the consequences of all this. I mean, to the point where you talk, Clinton, about having a hard time orgasming with your wife. So I want to know, as I'm listening to your story, like, is there hope? Like, can you come back from this? And I think your answer is yes, but how? Like, I want to hear how men are finding healing for their porn addiction, and how's their hope? How were you able to come back from such a hard place in your marriage to where you are now?
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you're asking that. I'm so glad we get to talk about that, because, you know, our story is somber, it's dark, it's ugly, but the only reason we're here on this podcast is because of the grace of God and what he can do. We really believe that the ultimate healer is Jesus Christ. And we have to give him all the glory for what we experienced today in our relationship, for sure. But the short answer, Willow, is yes, God can do that. And he loves to do that. And I think he loves to blow our mind with what he's capable of doing. I mean, to know that today our sex life has never been better. Our relationship has never been better. Jared and I have full trust with each other. There's nothing hidden in our relationship. And the fact that I can say that is one thing, but the fact that Jared is sitting next to me smiling is another thing, because she can feel that intimacy that's being created. So there's a lot out there for guys to get plugged into. I think that there are more and more, past decade or so, 10, really 15 years, 20 years ago, they started really seeing an influx of programs and things that are coming about. And there's a lot out there that we can always talk about. But my thing is, my belief is that men, the issue is not necessarily even with pornography. See, pornography is the medication, mm-hmm. right? Pornography is actually the solution to an internal problem. And so as much as we want to stop doing behavior, we can stop porn and then become an alcoholic and stop alcoholism and then become somebody who struggles with eating disorders. There's all kinds of issues that men can develop. What we really have an issue with is intimacy. And so I've become a big believer that if men don't understand how to get raw and real with other people, they will always live a life that is there to make other people like them and love them and respect them and appreciate them. But inside, we are internally broken. And we all know this. We all know we're broken. But if men aren't willing to admit they're broken, then unfortunately, man, we have a world of hurt and pain awaiting us. And we're going to medicate that somehow. So my suggestion to men out there, if they're looking for help, is to really plug into a system that doesn't just do behavior modification, but really helps us understand the underlying roots of why addiction took place in the first place. You know, what was the soil? What was the fertilizer for pornography or other addictions to really take root in our heart and become the way that we medicate our emotions? And my roots were really that I didn't feel lovable in myself. I didn't feel adequate in my own life. I felt like I was inadequate, which is fine to be a Christian, but if we don't think that we're adequate in Jesus, then we're always trying to medicate that. I didn't feel that I really had a lot to offer my wife or my kids deep down. I felt like I was internally flawed. And so there was all these things that I was really dealing with. And pornography just became the medication to help me calm all of the emotions in my life. So outside of that, yeah. And the thing that happened was I got intimate with other men, not sexually, right? We're not talking about sexual intimacy here. We're talking about being known and being open with things that make me feel anxious, that make me feel worried. Finances, being a dad, being a husband, being the provider, maybe job stuff, business stuff, whatever it was that's going on in my life, maybe my own issues with my own dad or my own mom or grandparents or uncles and aunts, whatever's going on in my life, being open about what happened to me as a kid with other men, really laying it on the table, created a transparency and an intimacy I had never had before. And once those internal core beliefs were addressed, I no longer had to suppress them because I addressed them, if that makes sense. And so that's what happened. And then from there, I went on to be intimate with my wife. Again, not sexually, that was going to happen in time, but intimacy with her, and I let her in on me. And for the first time, I let her see me. We say all the time, if you want to be truly loved, you're fully loved, you have to be fully known. Mm-hmm. And so when I allowed Charity to fully see me, which took time because she was betrayed, so that's not going to happen right away. But once she was able to actually take time and see me and love me the way I was, it changed our relationship.
Yeah. You know, there's so much good stuff here for so many issues besides porn addiction, but definitely for porn addiction. I mean, one of my very favorite things that you guys say on your website, which, by the way, you guys, this is the cutest little couple you've ever seen. Go watch their videos on their website. It'll be in the show notes. But I watched your stories, and one of my favorite things you said is that it wasn't just about getting rid of porn. And I think that's so interesting, because so many people make it about just getting rid of porn and kind of set their life up so they can't access porn. And obviously that's important, but you actually talk about finding freedom from porn addiction and freedom from something and freedom to something. And I'm wanting you to lean into that a little bit because I think it's so powerful.
Mm, so good. Yeah, you know, I think why we chose the name Restore is it means being better than new, right? And I want to, you know, our whole ministry is kind of off of this this verse, but it says 1 Peter 5:10, it's in his kindness, God called you to share in his eternal glory by means of Christ Jesus. So after you have suffered a little while, he will restore, support, and strengthen you, and he will place you on a firm foundation. And that's what we held on to, is we believed that our God is a restorative God, meaning that he can totally help us and make us better than new, that we could have a completely new marriage, a completely new marriage, bedroom, sex life, relationship, communication. Because see, what infidelity did in our relationship is it opened up a door to realize and to see maybe other flaws that we had in our relationship. Because let's be honest, like, infidelity was just one of them. Was it a big one? Yes. But we also had communication things that we needed to work through and other trauma from our past that we needed to work through. And so infidelity was just like, hey, this is the biggest one. And you can now work on all of your stuff, or you can just stay hidden and let, you know, just zip it up and pretend it's not there and let it continue to seep out when stress gets high. Right. And so for us, we were like, hey, we are going to dive deep. If we're going to do this, we're going to go all in and we're going to do whatever it takes for as long as it takes. That meant Clinton getting healing on his end, me getting support on my end. And then it wasn't even that just sobriety, because see, a lot of times I think men think sobriety equals intimacy. And don't get me wrong, it is a part. But what also helps the betrayed spouse is him having empathy for me and what I was going through. And then on my end is not just having support on my end, but how can I support my husband in this? How can I have compassion and learn what he is growing through and overcoming? And I love that because we have learned how to overcome mountains that we didn't even know were possible. And we came out stronger, together than when we were, back in the day. We know how to overcome things when things, come our way and they're hard things. We look at each other and we're like, okay, we can get through this because we've been through infidelity and we didn't let it define us. We really let it transform us in our relationships that it could be a beacon of hope for others and that we can keep on moving forward and showing other people that they can overcome too. So it has led to so many amazing things. Yeah. And we are now free, in so many other, ways in our marriage and in our individuality too.
I love it. You guys, you just said you didn't let it define you. And I think, no, you didn't. You let it purpose you, change you and purpose you. And now you're leading this ministry. This story you share, this is a vulnerable story. Why are you willing to be so vulnerable about it with so many people?
I think it's a big part of keeping it in front of me personally. I love sharing Restored to More and the birth of it is that Charity, I was finishing up, a Christ-centered 12-step group. And I, at the end of it, it's really, hey, how can you use your story to benefit others? And I'm not going to lie. I was so excited, Willa, to get through this and just get freedom and go, all right, back to business, back to life as usual. And God had different intentions. That is for sure. And he put on my heart to go ask Charity about her vision. And I didn't know she had a huge vision with this whole thing, but I came to her one day and said, hey, what's your vision? And she said, oh my gosh, I want to do a podcast and write a book. I want to mentor other couples. I was like, whoa, pump the brakes. And that's all happening now. That was at the start, really the start of 2020 was when we started really the whole thing. And I just think, we're kind of all in people. If we're going to share it, we're going to share it. Mm-hmm. But we also know that the shame is in the details. Mm-hmm. And the more details I share, the less shame there is around it. And the more details that people hear, their shame can have less power. And maybe, just maybe, they'll have enough hope to reach out and say, can you help me? Can you pray for me? Can you come alongside me? And our biggest goal is that we would be a conduit for other couples to find help, a pillar of hope that somebody else would look to and go, you know what? If God can do that in their life, then maybe, just maybe, God could do it in my life. And that's why we share.
I love this because it has Jesus smeared all over it. And I say that because it's just so like the Clyde story. Our ministry was birthed out of pain and God using pain to bring out beauty in other people's lives. And that's how God works. And that's how he's working through you. And it's so beautiful. I want to close with this question. I think about people listening right now. And I think about, there's some who are sitting on secrets. And they might want freedom. They might want a way out. And there's other people who are sitting on this hunch that they're being betrayed by someone they love. And they're scared. And they don't know what to do. They don't know how to confront it. They don't know how to bring it up. What's your advice for both those people?
Yeah. I remember being in that spot. And I remember, Clinton had started getting help and everything that he was going through. And I remember just sitting there and feeling so hopeless because I hadn't told a soul except for that pastor that one time. And I remember just being so hurt and like, I am not okay. This has deeply affected me, but I was so afraid to bring the darkness into the light. And I remember just being filled with shame. I remember thinking, well, what are people going to say? And people are going to judge my husband. They're going to tell me to leave him. They're going to tell me he's a terrible man. And I was afraid of what it was going to, the reputation that it was, they're going to have on my husband and our relationship. And I just had to move past that and realized that it was worth my own, even just personal growth and personal healing, to start getting support on my end from safe people, right? I want to clarify, you really, we are very passionate about this because it's part of our story, but you want to go to somebody who you know is safe, meaning that they will not judge you, that they will love you, that they will hear you, that they will see you, understand you, pray with you, be there with you in it, because that is going to lead to healing. Yeah. All you want is just for someone to be on the other end, being open with you and not criticizing, not judging you. And so that may be, if you don't have any safe family members or friends, that may be right now just a counselor or a therapist, right? But it's really when you start opening up, oh my gosh, the freedom that it's going to give you in your personal growth is, I wish I would have done that earlier on in my journey. And because it just led to so much healing individually in my life.
Yeah. And I would just add to that, I think the issue is that people that we love aren't always safe people for this topic. Mm-hmm. And just because they are a safe person in other areas with your kids and their grandma or grandpa, or they're your pastor or life group person, I'm not putting that person down because I don't know them, right? But what I'm saying is they need to be, in my opinion, qualified. Mm-hmm. And what makes somebody qualified is somebody who's gone through it themselves and come out the other side. That for me is a qualified person. Mm-hmm. Somebody that is not going to shame you, because if they haven't gone through it, they may not know how to react. And mm-hmm. I know that we talked about this a little bit, you know, my wife and I are Christians. We love Jesus. We are connected to the church, but the church doesn't have always the best resources for this. And even the church can be very shaming with the Bible at times, to use verses and say, you should just stop that person or leave that person. And we believe that a lot of times those verses are pulled out of context. And the whole picture isn't being shown to that person of what Jesus really wills for a couple in this setting. And so what's important is, of course, to get with somebody and find out, first of all, is it dangerous to open up, right? Is it going to be physically dangerous? Because that's a whole other topic. But outside of that, is the person I'm talking to qualified? Do they understand what I'm going through? Do they lead a ministry? Are they in ministry themselves in this area? Are they connected? And I think that stuff is super important. Otherwise what could happen, and happens too often, is they get bad advice and they feel more defeated, more shame, and they run away. And I just think, man, we got to stop from that from happening early on. And that's running to the right people for help.
Well, and that's why I love that you guys offer so many resources and help for people, because you have walked through it and come out the other side, and you're being so real about it and inviting others to come with you. So how can people connect with you guys and the beautiful work that you're doing?
Yeah, so they can go to our website. Our website is restoredwiththenumber2more.com. We also have a weekly podcast that is called Restored Number Two More. We also have a Facebook, Instagram, YouTube channel. That's all called Restored with the Number Two More. And right now we are actually going to be starting a couples workshop that is a 6-week series. It's going to be Monday nights from 7 to 8:30 PM PST time. And it is going to be for couples. It's calling Restoring the Relationship. And we are super excited. We're going to be going over a lot of things that we talked about today, but more so just how to come alongside each other. Because a lot of the time, right, there's women have groups, men have groups, but where can the couple come together and really support one another and learn how to rebuild trust and intimacy in such a fragile time? And so we're going to be talking about all that stuff in our workshop. And then we also offer one-on-one coaching, for men, women, or couples.
I love it, you guys. Thank you so much for coming on and being so vulnerable, honest, and giving us hope. It was so great to hang out with you.
Oh, the privilege was all ours. Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you so much. We loved it.
Yeah, and for those of you listening, if you want healing and freedom, check out what these guys are doing, and also check out the WeCollide.net website if you want more resources on healing and freedom. And if this podcast really stood out to you and you have a friend that you think would be blessed, would benefit and experience life change by hearing it, pass it on, send it, share it. And don't forget, you guys, God can handle it all. He can handle all the pain, all the mess, the entire story, even the secrets. And so know that hope is here and help is here for you to grab hold of to experience that healing and freedom. Keep colliding, and we'll catch you next week.
Thanks for tuning in. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram at we.collide, on Facebook as at We Collide Women, and you can also visit our website at wecollide.net to find our blog, resources, event information, and more. One last thing. If you enjoyed this episode, would you take a few seconds and leave us a review? It seems like such a small act, but reviews help us to keep producing this content and help other women find it too. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode and letting us walk with you as you seek and collide with Jesus.